Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
It is better to be truthful and good than to not.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
And they're sometimes joined by guests like...
This is Travis.
I had to stop her from screaming.
And Diane.
If you men only knew.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Happy Halloween! This is Eric.
This is Drew.
And I believe this is actually going to be the Halloween episode. Let the right one in.
Right on. So we have completed our trip around the world.
We have indeed. And we're completing it with Let the Right One In. So the year, 2008. The director, Tomas Alfredson. We know him also from Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. Did you see that?
I had no idea. That was true. I've seen it. I loved it.
Yeah. It was, it was deliberately paced, let's say.
It was slow, but it was a thinker of a movie. I mean, a lot like Let the Right One In is, but it was really interesting, and it treated its audience with respect. It didn't dumb down too much stuff, so I really appreciated it.
No, I agree. And this movie actually treats its audience with some respect too.
It does. This movie doesn't even waste any exposition on telling you what year it's set in.
Yeah, it's very small. The setting is very, very small, which, as we've discussed many a time, helps a horror movie.
Yes. It's not quite as small as Wreck, but it's small.
Not quite, but almost. So have you seen the American version?
Yes.
And what did you think?
I liked it too. I mean, it was really similar, but with better looking people.
Well, I haven't seen the one.
You've not seen the American version?
I have not seen the American version.
It has a slightly different perspective. Like, all the beats are there. It just, the magnifying glass is on different things.
Hmm.
But it's really similar.
Well, the book is also different. And we can talk a little bit about that. But this is also a very deliberately paced movie. And it's all about ambiance and tone, I think.
Yeah, I got the feeling that it was specifically paced to make you uncomfortable as you're watching it.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah, there's a lot of there's a lot of uncomfortable parts to it. Have you seen The Babadook, by the way?
I have not. I've heard that's really freaky.
It's really freaky, and it's not so much freaky, although the Babadook itself is fairly freaky, but once you acclimate to that being the image, the monster, it's not as freaky as, say, the first part of the movie where there is ostensibly no monster, where basically it's a mom who never gets any sleep because her child is kind of a high-maintenance child. Like, I felt for the mom a lot. And, I mean, it's designed to. It's not just, you know, it's not the dark place I was in. It just happens to be that's what it sets you up for. Because you don't know whether the mom is imagining this or not. So back to Let the Right One In. And I've got the plot summary basically from Wikipedia. So things are slightly out of order. And I'll count on you to interrupt if I miss important parts. But what we have is a fairly simple story. Our main character's name is Oscar, and he is a 12-year-old boy who lives in the western Stockholm suburb of Blackeberg. This says it's 1981, but yeah, it doesn't. This particular tale does not depend on what time it is.
Unless I'm mistaken, it never actually says what year it is, right?
I don't think so.
Maybe it's obvious if you're from Sweden. But because I'm not, it was sort of extra disorienting to me that, like, I didn't know if it was just like a Napoleon Dynamite thing where sort of the fashions and the aesthetics are anachronistic, or if it was truly set in the past. And it wasn't until I was like really paying attention to the technology and the vehicles that I clued in, probably way later than I should have if I were smarter. Fun thing about the movie, it never tells you.
No, and there really isn't any technology to speak of. I mean, there's, you know, they play music on a record player at Oscar's house and on a very, very old, like, cassette player in the school, I think. But all of that could just be stuff that they still have in 2015.
Yeah, it could be.
I mean, there's no reason it couldn't. But yeah, and so there's something about... Now, I don't know who plays Oscar or the equivalent of Oscar in the American version, but Oscar is a perfect, gawky 12-year-old boy.
Yeah, he's both heartbreakingly sympathetic and also off-putting for being such a weirdo.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, he just seems... He's uncomfortable in his own skin, and so that makes you uncomfortable anyway. And he is so meek that, especially when confronted, that it doesn't give you as much sympathy.
Yeah, and he comes from a broken home, and he doesn't have any siblings, and he doesn't have any friends. So he's alone a lot. And he seems very lonely and doesn't really have anybody that he can rely on.
Yeah, not at all. And he also is bullied at school. So, and there, he has no way out of that. He does not have the tools to deal with being bullied, which is, of course, how bullying works.
Yeah. And he has a stoicism about him, especially when it comes to the bullying. You know, he's not running home and crying about it. He's keeping everything inside.
Yeah, and although he does fantasize, although we don't get to see it in some sort of cheesy fantasy, but you know, he collects newspaper clippings about murders, and he has like pictures of hunting knives, has a hunting knife that he keeps under his mattress, and then he pretends to stab the bullies with. Which seems like a...
Yeah, that's actually how that's how he's introduced.
Yes.
He's this weirdo blonde kid with a really bad haircut, sort of shadow boxing with a knife, saying squeal pig, right? Or something like that.
Yes. Oh, at this point, I will point out that the version I saw of this was dubbed, and it was dubbed... poorly. And by that, I don't mean that the voices were wacky, but the actual language was wacky. Like, I think that there's a scene where these two friends are parting company after spending a night at a pub, just before one of them gets killed, spoilers. And the one guy tells the other guy, you know, like...
The legal issue is really interesting, you know? I enjoyed talking about it with you. Jack. Thanks for a night steeped in friendship and lots of fun.
Good night, old buddy. See you tomorrow.
You're the best, Jack.
No, you are.
That's awesome.
But other than that, you know, it actually, because... There aren't really any long speeches, you know, that I can think of. Everything is pretty short and to the point.
It seems like a very taciturn culture.
Yeah. Yeah, again, and that may be culture. And it's also wintertime. So, you know, that helps. That actually also brings it makes the world smaller. Because it's not like they're going to go any distance from where they are anyway. But luckily, most of the events take place at the school or the apartment building that Oscar lives in. There's a scene at the hospital.
Yeah. And you mentioned winter, and I loved the winter aesthetic. I mean, it probably comes from growing up in Alaska, but I just love movies that are set in winter, where it's both really dark because you know, there's not a whole lot of sunlight in winter, but also really bright because the snow cover reflects all the light around it. And I just love it.
Yeah, because that's the thing about winter, especially, you know, any place there's snow, is that, on one hand, it's, you know, I mean, in Anchorage, it's darkest in the fall and the spring when there's no snow on the ground. And, you know, it's really dark at night, unlike the summertime where it doesn't get completely dark except for a little bit. It gets totally dark fairly early as the year progresses. And if there's no snow on the ground, it is super dark. You realize there's not a whole lot of lights, you know, around town. Because in the wintertime, you have the blanket of snow on the ground, which makes all the lights reflect, which makes it just, you know, lighter anyway. And you generally have some either clouds or like inversion fog or whatever it is that kind of reflects also. So you've got this like, it's never like completely dark. But it's kind of spooky when it's dark. Like when all the trees are white, but it's like, you know, the middle of the night and the lights are few or far between, or it's just the moonlight. Ugh, it's great. To me, that's way spookier than if it was just pitch black.
Yeah, I've spent time in Southeast Alaska late in the year, like October, November. So it gets dark. It's also much further south than Anchorage. It gets dark, but they don't get very much snow, and it is creepy, the difference of how dark it is, you know, without the snow cover. And plus, I was staying in a haunted house deep in the woods, so that added to it too.
Yeah, that's true. But, yeah, if I was in the middle of the woods, if it was dark outside, I wouldn't want to be running around in the dark in the woods, but I don't think I want to be running around in the woods anyway.
As it turns out, there are also bats.
What you can't see can't hurt you. And what you can see and is awkwardly flying around inside the house that you're in, that might cause you to get both rabies and histoplasmosis. Well, that's a different deal.
Indeed.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. So we meet Oscar, and he gets bullied. And so, again, he's sympathetic, but he's also pretty pathetic. But then a new next-door neighbor moves in, and as Oscar's outside, he's introduced to Ellie, who is a very pale, kind of androgynous-looking girl about his age. And she lives next door with an older guy named Hakan.
Do they ever say his name?
I'm not sure. I mean, definitely he's a character in the book, so we know his name. But I don't know if they actually say his name. And he's not as much a part of the movie as he is the novel. He's a pretty big part of the novel, and there's a much different ending for him. But, so Ellie is just basically kind of like observing what Oscar's doing.
She just kind of appears. There's like this like set of monkey bars, sort of, or like a metal climbing gym. And Oscar is just kind of out playing by himself. I think he maybe pretends stabbing with a knife again. And all of a sudden, she just appears on the top of these monkey bars. And they introduce themselves to each other. And she tells them that they cannot be friends. And he doesn't quite know what to make of that.
But he's happy to have someone to talk to, you learn.
And I think this is where he also tells her that she smells weird.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. It's a great interaction between 12-year-olds, I think, because they're kind of awkward, but they still want to talk. And Oscar's trying to be impressive without acting like an ass.
Yeah, and she seems forward but weary.
Yes, and so upon reflection, do you think Ellie was sizing Oscar up to eat?
No. I don't think so. Although, just based on how her face looked, because it changed throughout the movie depending on when she had fed last, she must have been pretty hungry. But no, I think this was bef- before, I think it was before her guy tried to go out and get her some food the first time, right?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, so I think she was just weary from traveling and wanted to get outside, stretch her legs a little bit, float to the ground once or twice.
Yeah.
And decided to chat with the neighbor, because I don't think at this point she was desperate enough to feed where she lived.
Well, and as we learn, she's not new at this, so... Although the guy that goes to get her meals is apparently not very good at his job.
Yeah, there's really a lack of sophistication about how he goes about it. You know, there's obviously tools that he's developed to do it, but he's no criminal mastermind. But I think you can see why when you see everything kind of come full circle at the end of the movie.
Well, yeah.
So in retrospect, I think she may have been sizing Oscar up not to eat, but potentially to take Hakan's place.
Huh. From the get-go, you think?
Well, like you said, she's not new to this, and she had to have been through the cycle once or twice, and she knew her current helper was getting up there in years.
And making mistakes. We never see Hakan do a successful mission. Like, twice,
no.
He screws up pretty badly. And so, yeah, that's a problem. But in the beginning, though, it's just a simple little two 12-year-olds. It could be like a sort of a romance, kind of cute coming-of-age story, where Oscar has a Rubik's Cube and... kind of shows Ellie how it works and lets her borrow it, and then she returns it presumably the next day or soon afterward, all completed, and now they're buddies.
Right.
But there's tension because Hakan asks Ellie to stop seeing Oscar because, frankly, Hakan is jealous.
Yeah, you never it's never explicitly said what his motivation is. You don't know initially if he's under some spell or if she's blackmailing him, but there's just one scene, and it's really subtle, where she kind of touches his face in a tender way, and you can see him just melt.
Yeah, it's pretty explicit in the book, but
that he loves her is that's his motivation, right?
Yeah, he's a pedophile.
Oh, I didn't get that.
Yeah, no. I assumed it was
she had groomed him from a young lad, just like Oscar.
Oh no, nope. He was a fully formed pedophile.
Oh well, that makes what happens to him a lot less sympathy.
Yeah.
You know, with that knowledge.
Yeah, well, it's worse in the book, or better, depending on how you look at it. You know, other cultures treat these things differently. I don't know if we've talked about the miniseries Ultraviolet, but it has Idris Elba.
Right. Yep. And Stephen Moyer.
Yeah. And you've seen it?
Yeah. Yeah, I have.
Well, there's a very good episode of that deals really cleverly with pedophilia and vampires.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. It's just basically like the pedophile gets what he deserves because he runs into a kid who's not a kid.
Oh, nice.
Which is something of a trope, I guess, in short horror fiction, because I know Pseudopod, that it's this podcast that does short works of fiction as a podcast. They have some submission suggestions, and one is a whole list of things that have already been done. So they're not telling you not to try them, but just realize that you have to do an outstanding job to make it work. And one is just the whole notion of the predator going after the prey, and we find out the prey is actually the much larger threat, specifically the pedophile vampire thing.
Interesting.
Yeah, this is a more nuanced relationship, but we'll get there anyway. In the movie, at least, Hakan and Ellie live together, and he at least does some of her bidding. I mean, he's the adult, so he gets to go out and interact such that he does. with the society.
He's the one that can go out during the daylight.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. He can secure all those like arrangements that she can't. And he goes out.
He can get her from point A to point B when you have to travel during the day.
Yeah. And there's quite a bit of vampire mythology. Like the whole idea of Let the Right One In. Like he, you know, Ellie has to be invited into a residence or she can't go.
Yeah. I love the way they address that in this movie.
Yeah. It's again, it's a small thing, but it gets tested and it becomes, you know, a big thing.
Right.
So, and yet they don't have to do the laundry list of tropes like silver bullets and crosses and whatnot.
Exactly. They just hit the big ones.
Yeah. So at the same time that like Hakan is saying, hey, you got to stop seeing this Oscar kid. Oscar is continuing to be bullied at school and ends up getting hit with a stick in his cheek.
Right. Yeah. It's a pretty nasty gash.
Yep. And when Ellie asks him what happened, and he basically ends up telling her, she's like, oh no, you have to stand up for yourself. You have to, if they hit you, you have to hit them harder, which no, it isn't really in Oscar's nature to do so, but this inspires him to like enroll in weight training classes after school.
Right. And before all this happened, we see Hakan out on his first mission for Ellie after they arrive, trying to obtain some blood from a traveler going through the local woods. And Hakan has a whole system.
I was going to say, he has a pretty sophisticated setup for a fairly crude job.
Right. I mean, I wouldn't say sophisticated. It's practiced. I mean, he has like a crappy funnel and a plastic jug that he essentially has to hold under the guy that he's strung up when he punctures his neck.
But he has that medical, like, gas canister face mask thing.
Right. Yeah. Okay. It's not chloroform. He calls it something else, but it has the same effect that chloroform always does in movies.
Yeah. But it's not like he pours a little bit on a rag and sticks over somebody's face. He's got like this whole, like something you would have in an ambulance kind of setup.
Right. And he's got a nice case that he is very comfortable fitting everything in for quick travel. But yeah, the first time he does it, he's interrupted because some locals lose control of their poodle, which ends up interrupting him.
Yeah, they're white.
And he doesn't handle it very well.
No, they're white poodle.
Right.
Which makes for a nice scene when the white poodle gets blood all over it, too.
Yes.
Yeah. So it doesn't work out so well.
Yeah, and that makes Ellie not very happy because she's pretty hungry. And she ends up having to take care of business herself.
Yes. And this is that scene that I'll put the quote in from when Jock and Lackey are part company drunk from a bar. And
yeah, Lackey really gets the rawest deal in the whole movie.
Well, kind of.
No, he does, hands down.
Okay, well, we'll get there. Yeah, but Jock is on his way home, and Ellie springs down and gets him.
Yeah, and this isn't a particularly gory movie. So this attack takes place mostly in the shadows, and it doesn't look... It looks odd, but not necessarily supernatural. I mean, she kind of attacks him like a feral child would.
Yeah, actually, I'm sorry.
She jumps on him. And
yeah, she was actually crouched down, right, and making, like, noises.
Yeah, like come help me. Yeah. And when he came close, she jumped on him.
Yeah.
And, but at the end of it, I don't know why, you know, she's on his back and he's on his stomach in the snow as she's feeding off him. And then, I don't know, just to make sure he's dead, she twists his head all the way around. That was pretty gruesome.
Yeah, it was pretty gruesome. And this is all, as it turns out, witnessed by the local cat lady who's a guy.
Yeah. Yeah. He seemed more like a pedophile than anybody else.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Because he certainly had an aversion to go to the police.
Yeah, well, yeah. Well, and when Hakan finds out that Ellie's done this, Hakan has to go out and clean up the body. And he ends up taking and dumping the body in this ice hole in a local lake.
Yeah. Again, not very sophisticated. He just drags the body through the woods on a plastic sled.
Yep. And just dumps it in this, near like a culvert that still has some open water.
Right. And then tries to push it under the ice with a snow pole.
Yes, exactly. So then, a little bit later, I mean, there's a little bit more interaction between Ellie and Oscar. And I think that's where Oscar teaches Ellie Morse code.
That's a little bit later. I think right after that is when is the Rubik's Cube interaction where we also find out that Ellie doesn't smell so bad anymore.
Oh, yes. Yes. So.
And her eyes are a little bit brighter.
Yeah. Well, and then we have the second of the of Hakan going to get another meal for Ellie. And that's where he traps a teenager in the changing room after school. And this is, again, one of those things where, I mean, it seems fairly practiced because he's got this kid all strung up. He's ready to go.
Yeah, he's good with ropes. He's good with ropes, but not very good at strategic timing.
Yes, or stealth. So, yeah, so the boy's friends go to catch up with him, and they kind of see what's going on. And but before he's discovered, he activates Plan B, or his escape plan or whatever, which is to pour acid on his own face, which is presumably to prevent it from being identified and traced back to Ellie.
Yeah, I assumed he was trying to actually kill himself.
Yeah, it could have been.
But, yeah. He wasn't really big on contingency planning. I don't know what the acid was for in the first place, but apparently it was just there for personal face melting.
Yeah, like in case
when things go badly.
In case of emergency, break acid glass and pour it on yourself.
Right.
So he's taken to the hospital, and Ellie finds out that he's been taken there, and so she goes to visit him on the 7th floor of the hospital. And by this time, it's really clear what Ellie is. So, the fact that she leaps up to the 7th floor in whatever way she gets there. This movie was pretty clever about that, too. You never see her flying or jumping or anything. You just see her kind of landing.
Yeah, well, she climbed up the side of the building like Spider-Man.
Yeah, I guess. And I guess she climbs up a pole pretty fast, too. But
right.
They're pretty economical with that kind of stuff, which I appreciated.
Yeah, and the effects of when she kind of, to use a Lost Boy term, when she vamps out, it's really... It's not like a lot of makeup. I think they actually use a different actress, like an older one. But it's really disconcerting because they only show flashes of it and she has a different face, but it's very similar looking. Doesn't look at all supernatural. It just looks way older all of a sudden.
We know, and there's actually a third actress that plays Ellie, just does Ellie's voice because they replaced Ellie's voice with a deeper voice. Like the actress that plays Ellie was picked because she sort of comes off a little androgynous. I mean, with the long hair and stuff. Oscar could come off a little androgynous too.
Oh, definitely.
But they deepen his voice, they deepen her voice, so it's a little bit creepier. And this is when the movie gets a little more sexual between Ellie and Oscar because.
Yeah. Well, right around the time, Hakan's in the hospital, Elliot has an encounter with his bullies where he has, which I think is the very same snow pole because his class is going ice skating on the lake. And I think Oscar found the snow pole that Hakan used to hide the body.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm in there just a second. It's a clever bit of business because they're on the lake and the bullies had threatened to take Oscar for a swim. And Oscar was feeling a little bit of his oats because Ellie has kind of inspired him to a little manliness, and he has found that snow pole. But at the same time, some girls from the class are going over to pee, and they are soon to find Jacques' body.
Yeah, and so Oscar actually stands up to his bully and takes Ellie's advice and hits him as hard as he can. Harder than he even thought he could, and hits him in the side of the head with a snow pole, and hits him so hard he like splits his ear open.
Which the bully's friends are suddenly not really impressed with being the bully's friends at this point.
Exactly. And even the bully himself is He still tries to show some bluster later, but he's not all that interested in screwing around with Oscar anymore.
Oh, no. No, he's a crying mess when he gets hit in his head split open by the fiberglass pole.
Yeah. I mean, even afterwards, when he shows up at school with his ear all bandaged up, he still tries to be the tough guy, but he doesn't really push it too far anymore.
Yeah. And Oscar realizes he has some kind of alternate plan than just taking him. And yet, he's still Oscar, you know. He's not a superhero.
Right. No.
And he's still like a 98-pound weakling.
I mean, that part's well done. Yeah, that part's well done. Because certainly Oscar now has a little bit more agency in his own life. But he's still the awkward, meek little kid.
Yeah, I mean, he's a skinny little awkward kid. And that's not changing anytime soon.
Right.
Yeah, so Ellie, after she feeds on Hakan, Ellie goes to the hospital, and Hakan opens the window and offers his neck for Ellie to feed on. So Ellie feeds on him, and then he falls out the window and lands in the snow out front.
Very unceremonious ending for her helper dude.
Well, that's not the way it ends in the book, but we'll get there. So, I mean, one of the things I appreciate about the movie is that, you know, the book, novels by their nature can take off and, you know, every character can be developed and there's can be lots of little tangents. And when you have, you know, a 90-minute movie or a little bit more than that, you have to really narrow down your focus. So I think they did a really good job in this movie. But once Hakan is gone, Ellie's on her own. So she's ends up showing up at Oscar's apartment. And spends the night with him. And it's you know, at one time it's kind of touching, but it's also a little awkward because, A, we know that she's a vampire or a monster of some kind. And Oscar asks her whether they can go steady. And, of course, she's like, well, no, of course not. But what's going steady? And then also point, you know, as you know, Oscar is like, you know, when a boy and a girl, like, you know, go together, and Ellie's like, well, what if I'm not a girl? And then Oscar like takes a beat and is like, well, do you still want to go steady?
It's like, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So then in a very cute way, when it's pointed out that nothing really changes in what they do, except they're saying they're going steady, then she's like, sure, we're going steady. And, this is where Oscar ends up, and after the thing with the lake, Oscar ends up showing Ellie this private place he knows about, and they just suggest they form a blood bond.
Well, before that, there's another fun exploration of the vampire mythology where he tries to get Ellie to eat some candies.
Oh, yes.
And she's like, nah, man, I'm good. And, but in Swedish, and he kind of looks at her like she's a weirdo. So she takes one very hesitantly. And then it just cuts to her behind the little convenience store, just retching her guts out. And that's all. That's, they don't dwell on it. They don't try and explain it. That's all they do, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah. So then we have this blood brother scene where Oscar cuts his hand because he is a weirdo still.
And, yeah, such a fucking weirdo. Yeah.
And I mean, and he's like cutting his hand is like he's just so pleased with himself, and he's having like a little like almost like an orgasmic face to it. And she looks at him horrified, but also very thirsty for blood. So there's lots of weird emotions. And then she leaps to his feet, laps up the blood, and runs away.
Yeah, that's a really creepy scene because you just see it from the top. So you see her crouched on the floor, but her head is too far away from the floor. But you can kind of see this CGI tongue lapping up the blood.
Mm-hmm.
And then she looks up at him to tell him to go right now. And it's not her face. And there are these really quick cuts where it cuts to Oscar looking at her in horror. And it cuts back to her. And then she's normal Ellie again. And it's really disorienting.
And super effective.
Yeah, what I loved about it is there's no like weird makeup. She doesn't get weird ridges on her face or anything. It's just a different face. And I mean, there are no fangs that pop out or anything. It's subtle. And I think that actually makes it way more creepy. Maybe not like horrific, but really unsettling.
Yeah, unsettling is the right word, because the whole movie, every part of the movie is unsettling. Like, even like, you know, Oscar cutting his hand like that was unsettling. At this point, we have the, what's it, Lackey is his name, who is Jacques' friend. And
yes,
he is really, really sad that the Jacques is gone. And that's when Gosta, the cat guy, tells the neighbors that he saw a kid attack Jacques. And they all meet up in Gosta's apartment and are urging him to call the police, but he doesn't. Again, yeah, he's a weirdo cat dude. He's got something to hide. And Lackey is a super drunk guy. So, you know, he's all boo-hooing on his girlfriend Virginia's shoulder. So, as he is telling everybody that Jacques was his only friend, his girlfriend Virginia leaves, kind of pissed off.
Well, he was specifically a dick to her. I mean, she was trying to comfort him, and he was pretty rude.
Yeah. So she leaves in a huff, and that's where Ellie attacks her. But Lackey is not far behind. So he ends up interrupting the attack. And Virginia survives.
Yeah, he kicks Ellie off of Virginia like you would kick a small dog who is attacking something dear to you.
Yes.
And she goes flying.
But unfortunately, Virginia is not going to have a good time with this, because she survives, but the next morning realizes she is super sensitive to sunlight. And she is also thirsting for blood. And in a scene that I had not remembered from the first time I saw the movie, I mean, I knew that there was
the cat scene.
Yes, I did not remember the cat scene.
I didn't either. That's so weird.
Because the cat scene is, it's a little bananas.
It is, I think, unintentionally hilarious.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, they like it. I mean, cats hissing is creepy and scary. And several cats hissing is creepy and scary and adds ambiance. But as soon as you have the cats that are Velcroed or fake cats that are sewn onto a costume with somebody whirling around an apartment, you've gone too far.
And the cat lady dude has just a hilarious number of cats in his apartment.
Oh yeah, he's a legitimate animal.
This is the
hoarder.
First time where this is the first time you get to see them in all of their ridiculous glory. Because she has like a dozen cats attack her at once.
Oh yeah, yeah, she is being full on mauled by cats. So much so that
dude's apartment must smell really bad.
Yes, yes. Which is probably another reason he doesn't want the police over. But in the hospital, Virginia is realizing what she's become. So she asks an orderly to open the blinds in her room. And I think this is what you're referring to as Lackey gets the bad end of the deal.
Well, yeah. I mean, not just there's another thing that happens a little bit later that also is kind of a raw deal for him.
Okay.
But
first
he loses his...
sorry, for a second I forgot the end of the movie, because I was focused on the end. But yeah, there's a Lackey comes and becomes a bigger part of the end.
Yeah, but you know, first he loses his buddy, and then his lady turns into a vampire and immolates herself.
It bursts into flames in the hospital.
Yes, like this great rolling, roaring fire that is tumbling off the ceiling.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic.
I just made hand gestures that you can't see.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, we'll put it in a post.
Perfect.
Yeah, so now Oscar ends up confronting Ellie and saying, "Are you a vampire?" This is where Oscar's kind of testing Ellie, too. Like, she wants to talk to him, and he's in his house. And he's saying, you know, like, he won't invite her in. And she's like, "You have to invite me in." He goes, "Eh." And it kind of nods for her to come in. And he's being a cheeky little bastard.
He's like, "Eh, what'll really happen?" He, like, mimes, like, an invisible wall.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, what are you going to do? Yeah, come on. You know. And he's kind of being a dick about it. So she comes in. And that poses a problem. At first, you think things are going to be okay. But then she starts to, like, ooze blood from all of her orifices. So that...
Not even just orifices, like her shoulder
started to bleed. So, yeah, so...
Her hairline started to bleed.
Yeah, so Oscar freaks out and invites her in. And then she ends up having to wear one of Oscar's mom's dresses or something.
Yeah, actually a pretty suave move for a 12-year-old.
Oh, yeah.
Like, "I'm going to make you shoot blood all over your clothes and then offer you an opportunity to change into an apartment that doesn't have a lot of doors."
Yeah. Well, and they have a little, this is actually before their blood, changing on the bloody clothes thing, which has its own little surprise. They have this conversation about how Oscar's a little repulsed by Ellie's need to kill people for survival. And Ellie's like, "Dude, you would kill people if you weren't such a puss." Or not quite those words.
Well, yeah, but essentially, if you could, you would.
Yeah.
Because you're a little creep.
Yeah, yeah. "Hey, you're bloodthirsty too. You just can't do it. I have to."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then she encourages him to be me for a little while.
Yeah, I didn't get a good read on that. Was she like putting a spell on him, or was she getting like actually getting inside his head, literally?
Like Vulcan mind meld,
creating
kind of
some
thing?
Sort of psychic, yeah, like some sort of psychic bond with him?
I think so.
I don't know if that's explored more in the book, but it seemed very, the way she was talking seemed very purposeful.
Yeah.
But they don't really address that in the movie. This isn't a movie that really addresses a lot of things.
No. And not only does it not address a lot of, like for instance, one of his questions he has for Ellie is, you know, "So how old are you really?" And she's like, 12. He's like, 12? And she goes, "Well, I've been 12 for a very long time."
This is my favorite line of the movie.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And then in a scene that, frankly, I did not even see the first time I watched this movie, I only found out about it reading reviews later. Not sure what I had done to not be seeing it, or whether the idea of looking at a 12-year-old's genitalia just was something I was a little bashful about. But when when Ellie's changing out of her bloody clothes, and Oscar, a little creep, is trying to sneak a peek, although he's 12, so, you know, like all the 12-year-olds are little creeps, we see a scar where Ellie's genitalia should be. Turns out she's actually, not only is she not a girl because she's a vampire, but she's not a girl because she used to be a boy.
That is not explained.
No, not at all. It is in the book.
Okay, yeah, because in the movie, yeah, there's just like this flash of... You can't even tell what. I mean, she's supposed to be a girl, so you don't see anything, but there is like this weird scar, sort of like in the pubic bone area.
Yeah, kind of a horizontal scar.
So, yeah, so you don't, I don't know. And it's just a quick flash. So, yeah. I don't know. I didn't get the... when I watched it the first time, I had no idea what that was about. And I didn't get the sense that she wasn't a girl because, you know, from that angle, you can't really see much anyway.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think you had told me that when we had both first seen this on video, and I just asked if you'd seen it. It seemed like your type of movie. And yeah, that's the only reason I knew that there was something more to that than, whoa, she has a weird scar.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is where, you know, Ellie and Oscar are getting, they're a little more homey, actually. Although Oscar's mom comes home, so Ellie has to leave the apartment through a window. And that's always a cool parlor trick for a vampire.
Yep, not a problem for Ellie.
No. Because they live, what, on the third floor or something? Second floor? At least the second, if not the third.
Right.
Yeah, so yeah, this is where Lackey, who now he has lost everything, seeks out Hakan and Ellie's apartment. And he's suspicious of the...
Well, there's a couple weird subplots with Oscar's father.
Well, yeah.
There's one scene earlier when Oscar like goes to visit his father, like I guess for the weekend, and it's shown that for the first time he's actually really happy. I mean, he digs being with his dad, and you know, sort of in a more rural setting, and driving around on a snow machine, and wearing his dad's sweater, and playing games with him, and everything's great. But then the second time. Again, and this is right around, I think this is after the peeping Oscar scene. Right after that, he has another weekend with his father. But this time, their fun and merriment is interrupted by some weird creepy dude who changes the whole tenor of the evening when he shows up. And for some reason, Oscar's dad kind of drops everything to start drinking with his buddy. Or maybe not his buddy. I don't know. He seemed really menacing. I don't know if he was supposed to be a pedophile. He was kind of eyeballing Oscar weirdly.
Oh, see, and
so Oscar like takes off and hitchhikes home. But he doesn't go home. This is where he goes and hangs out in Ellie's apartment.
Yes.
But yeah, what was your take on that scene? Because it really baffled me. I mean, I don't begrudge the movie for not explaining everything, but that one was really a head scratcher.
Well, yeah, it's kind of strange because on one hand, okay, so is the problem that Oscar's dad, Eric, is a drunk, and that's why he's not living with Oscar's mom? Or is it that Oscar's dad and Oscar's mom are separated, divorced, whatever, and Oscar enjoys a boyfriend or two?
I mean, Oscar's dad.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Oscar's dad. Yeah. Yeah, so the relationship between Oscar's dad and creepy guy who shows up to drink is weird. And it casts a strange...
Because Oscar's dad didn't seem particularly happy that he was there, but seemed powerless to ask him to leave, too.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. That is a weird thing. But it creeps Oscar out enough or irritates him enough that, he hitchhikes home in the middle of the night.
Pretty bold.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is where Lackey kind of shows up at Hakan and Ellie's apartment. Like, he figures out the funky covered up windows.
Yeah, and Ellie has left a fun note for Oscar that says she's in the bathroom, but please don't open it up, and that they'll hang out later that night.
Oh, see, is that explained? Because in the version I saw, I know it had subtitles in it, but it was also poorly dubbed, and none of the notes were explained at all.
Yeah, there are two notes, and the first note she leaves him after she spent the night in his bed, but that's not explained until later. But yeah, the second one, when, he wakes up in the morning, yeah, it says, I'm pretty sure something exactly like that. Hey, I'm in the bathroom, but please don't open up the door. We'll hang out later tonight. XOXO or something.
Okay. Yeah, so when Lackey breaks into the apartment, Oscar is actually there, and Lackey doesn't realize this, and Lackey's rooting around and ends up discovering Ellie asleep in the bathtub. And this is where we have the moment of truth for Oscar, because Oscar's seeing this, and Lackey takes out a knife and holds it up to Ellie's neck while she's sleeping.
Well, he starts to peel the covering off the window.
Yes. And Oscar takes out his own knife, and when just as Lackey's opening the window, Oscar shouts and wakes Ellie up, and Lackey turns and throws his knife away when he sees Oscar, is what this note has. And Ellie immediately jumps on Lackey and kills him, feeding on his blood.
Yes. Kind of also a hilarious scene, because you're just watching it through the doorway and you see Ellie leap up from behind Lackey and clamp onto his back, just like she did with his best buddy, Jock. And then they sort of stumble out of frame and then back again through the frame, which is kind of funny. And then the door closes. I don't remember if Oscar closed the door or, yeah, there might be some blood splatter and then the door shuts.
Yeah. And the upstairs neighbor is knocking on the ceiling because of all the noise going on. So Ellie thanks Oscar and even kisses him in gratitude. But she also realizes that it's no longer safe to stay, and so she's got to leave.
Yeah, poor Oscar's heartbroken.
Oh, he is. Yeah, because, yeah, his girl is leaving. And, you know, but the next morning, he gets a phone call from the bully's friend, Martin, who tells him that the coach and the after-school program that he's been lifting weights with is wanting, you know, making sure he's going to come to this swim thing that's happening at the pool.
Yeah, I think it's another like weightlifting practice, but for some reason, when they get there, they're gonna start off with some water aerobics.
Yeah, it's a strange water aerobics, but oh well. I mean, what do you do? So yeah, so Oscar ends up in a swimming pool, and turns out the bully, who's Connie, is his name. He has a sadistic older brother named Jimmy, and they end up setting a dumpster on fire, which draws the gym teacher away. And then while he's distracted, the bullies go inside and kind of kick the other kids out and lock the door, presumably, which means that Oscar's by himself in the pool. And there's this whole scene where Jimmy tells him that he is going to force Oscar to stay underwater for 3 minutes. And if he doesn't, he's going to stab him in the eye.
Yeah, neither one of which seemed like very, very pleasant options.
Yeah, no, it's not going to be great. And Oscar, you know, he's been bullied before. So, you know, he does the whole routine of going underwater. And this is, to me, this was what made this movie.
Without his lady friend around, he is no longer emboldened to stand up to creepy, sadistic bullies who have switchblades.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, that poor other, like the smallest of the bully friends, he's not happy about any of this. The kid's gonna wet his pants every scene he's in.
Yeah, already. I mean, he wasn't down with the bullying from the very beginning. And for this, I mean, even Connie is like, this doesn't seem like a great idea, bro. Yeah.
But no, Jimmy's into it. And so Oscar's underwater, being held physically underwater by Jimmy's hand. Like his head, Jimmy's got his head by the hair and is holding him underwater. And this is the scene of the movie that just made the movie brilliant for me. It really captured something I had never seen before in like a ballet kind of way, because Oscar's just underwater. And so it's all dreamy underwater, and he's got this weird look on his face, like sort of a resignation look, and then he's like running out of air, so he gets kind of a struggly look. And then things start to happen off screen.
Yeah, and I think what really made this scene, before we actually describe what happened, I think what really made it effective is before this, Ellie seemed really creepy, but not necessarily all that menacing. If anything, she seemed more animalistic than supernatural.
Yeah, almost like a little bit pathetic because she has to do this to survive.
Right, and when Lackey came upon her when she was feeding on Virginia, it really didn't take much for him to shoo her off. So aside from being able to climb trees really quickly, you didn't really get the sense that Ellie was necessarily all that powerful.
And then the pool scene.
But that all changed when Oscar was underwater.
Yeah. In a great scene. And again, I think it's because I wasn't expecting it. Because, you know, like looking at it now, I kind of see what they were doing. Like I didn't see any special features or anything, but I kind of get the idea of kind of how they did the scene. But still, it was such a beautiful thing because you see, it's all this fast motion, and you have blood in the water, and you have like sounds coming from outside of the water that you can't really make out. And then you have like something get like dragged off toward the end of the pool, which is,
yeah, you see 2 feet in the pool next to Oscar's head, and they get dragged all the way to the other end of the pool and then pulled out.
Yes. And then you see the hand that was, or the arm that was holding Oscar's head down, follow.
Oh, but before that, you saw a severed head at the other end of the pool, kind of out of focus.
Yeah. A head falls in the pool. Absolutely. And yeah. And then the hand comes down, and when, it's Jimmy's torn off arm. So then Ellie pulls Oscar out of the water, and they look into each other's eyes and they smile. And around them, the decapitated bodies of Jimmy, Connie, and their tall friend Martin lie around the pool. And that the little kid, Andreas, who's the one who was sobbing from the very beginning, he is completely shut down sobbing, and he's going to be at a home for the rest of his life.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this place is a bloodbath of a massacre.
Yeah.
And you don't get to see any of it. You just get to see the little kind of out of focus things from the pool.
Yeah, and you don't get to hear it because you got the underwater thing going on.
Right.
So it's really serene. And like I said, sort of like a ballet. And then you realize that, oh yeah, something really horrible happened.
Yeah, that is really effective.
Yeah. Yeah. So then later, Oscar is traveling in a train, and he's got this big box next to him, which presumably Ellie's in, because she starts tapping Morse code, and she taps out the word kiss to Oscar, and he taps back the word puss, P-U-S-S, which actually in Swedish means small kiss.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So it's...
That's better.
Yeah, so it's really sweet at the end of it, but...
Well... Sort of. I mean, Oscar's definitely the new Hakan, but we saw how that ended.
Well, yeah, it's true.
And that really explained Hakan's incompetence, because you can sort of see that in Oscar. Like, he can probably learn how to collect blood for her, but he's kind of hapless. He's never going to be a true... the type of sort of prototype criminal that you would need to be able to carry out ruthless murders undetected.
Yeah, nor is he really the leader of men type.
Right.
Well, shall we talk about the novel?
Please, enlighten me.
Okay, because now I have only read the first part of the novel. I'm going to read the rest of it. But I did get the cliff notes for it to compare. And... by the way, did you know there's a sequel?
No, wait, I have to know. Are there actually cliff notes, or is that just figurative?
No, that's figurative, yeah. Yeah, no, there's no actual.
God, that'd be so great. That would be fantastic. Okay.
Well, and some of this will take a little bit of the mystery out of the movie, but I'm prepared to do that because, hey, you know. So here's the deal. Hakan is much, much more of a bad guy. He's a former teacher who was fired when caught with possession of child pornography and has since become a vagrant. And Ellie is a boy who was castrated when he turned into a vampire over 200 years ago. And he dresses in female clothing and is perceived by outsiders as a young girl. And Ellie gives Hakan money for procuring the blood. He's got money, or she's got money, sorry. But Hakan makes it clear that he would be willing to do it for nothing if Ellie allowed him to be physically intimate. So that's a tension that is that's not part of the movie.
Yeesh.
Yeah, well, it gets more interesting. So the scene in the hospital when Hakan throws himself out the window to the ground below, he doesn't die in the novel. He reanimates as a vampire driven only by his desire for Ellie. So for the rest of the book, he pursues her and then manages to trap her in a basement and tries to rape her. But Ellie then fights off and escapes. And Later, the wounded Hakan is destroyed by a youth from the neighborhood who accidentally gets locked in the basement with him. So, yeah.
So, still an unceremonious
end. Yeah, well, yeah. But long and more evil. So, the author, Lindvisk, wrote a short story called Let the Old Dreams Die. Specifically because a lot of people interpreted from the novel that Ellie was just preparing Oscar to be his helper all along. But in this follow-up short story, there's a photo from 2008 that's showing Oscar and Ellie in Barcelona, and neither of them appears to have aged a day, which implies that Ellie made Oscar a vampire too, so that they can remain a couple.
Huh. Doesn't seem practical.
Yeah, well, yeah, so all in all...
So did in the parts that you read, did it explain why Ellie was castrated as a 12-year-old? I assume that was before she was a vampire.
I believe so, yes. Yeah. And again, in the beginning, I'm pretty sure it doesn't explain it. It must explain it like more than halfway through. But I will have to restart it. I'm still on Days of Rage. So once that's over, I'll probably go back to Let the Right One In. But yeah, it's interesting. It's a nice little take on it.
But yeah, no, I thought this was a great movie. I mean, it was really a creative take on a very familiar type of story. It was kind of minimalist, and I think Oscar was way creepier than the actual creature of the night in the movie. So that was a fun little subversion.
Yeah, he was creepy, but he wasn't dangerous, you know? And,
right.
And so that was an interesting thing. And the fact that they were kind of suited to each other because they were both kind of creeps. But yeah, right. But it was violent without being gory for the most part. And it was like sexual without being the least bit sexy, which is good since we're talking.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
I mean, it's all very, you know, it's all very like, you know, pubescent kind of love, at least on his part. But, you know, there's no, yeah, it's not like exploitative.
No, and it felt very original.
Oh, yeah. Good stuff. So the American version, what can you think quickly about how it differs or how they emphasize different things? Or shall I watch it cold?
I think you should watch it. It's the first time I saw, I'm gonna butcher her name, like Chloe Grace Moretz. She played the vampire, and the kid from The Road played the Oscar role. But the helper dude, the Hakan character, is played by Richard Jenkins. And so he gets a little bit more screen time, I think, to a good effect in the movie. So I haven't seen that one as recently as Let the Right One In, but I remember actually really liking it. It wasn't that different, but different enough. They didn't dumb it down for the American audience, which I appreciated.
Well, it's highly thought of enough that not only have I not heard very many bad things about it at all, and let me tell you, it doesn't take very long hearing about the movie Wreck until you hear people complain about the movie Quarantine. So that would happen if people didn't like it. And also, the podcast The Canon, where the two film critics talk about and sometimes argue about the movies that should go in the canon of great movies, they did a whole episode, which I've not heard yet because I haven't seen the second movie, of Let the Right One In versus Let Me In. Only one can get in the canon. And they fought it out, and then they had the listeners decide, of course.
Oh, do you know who won?
Yeah, Let the Right One In won. But the one reviewer was not very happy with that.
Hmm.
But anyway. Yeah.
No, it was good. I watched it expecting not to like it, but I ended up liking it quite a bit.
Cool. Well, I'll have to dive in. Let's see, anything else about Let the Right One In, or Halloween in general?
No, happy Halloween. I hope everybody gets there safely and enjoys lots of candy.
Yeah, or whatnot. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages, or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts, dial it already.